Good morning, everyone. Coming to you live from somewhere in the Middle East, it is Saturday morning's hottest streaming media political talk show, Inside the Eye, live with The Fedge. Heck, did I just hear someone tell a standing member of Congress that if it were up to them, they would dump the Israelis tomorrow? Sounds like something you might hear right here on Inside the Eye Live.
The Fetch. What a man. Oh, my God. You have to listen to that show. He was brilliant. I didn't know he had gonads of steel like that and a mind like a frigging razor. I didn't realize he was so clear. He cut through this that cognitive dissonance that is going on in the whole Patriot music movement.
And now it's time for Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware.
All right, everybody, from Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Arabia, this is The Fetch. And you are live inside the eye, something like that. Do I have the right thing open here? I think so. Yeah, it says here today's date is Saturday, April the 20th, 2019. And a good Easter holiday weekend to all of you listening out there on the World Wide Web and our FM and micro FM broadcasting outlets. And of course, wherever you are listening, may all be well with you and yours. The weather here in Riyadh, no matter the case, is not in any way painted into or by the festivities of Easter. As you can imagine, being in the heart of Saudi Arabia, Easter is something that you just don't see at all. I don't think I've seen anything Easter-oriented. I'll be honest, over the years, I've seen a little Christmas kind of like sneak in, and I've seen a little bit of Valentine, actually a whole lot of Valentine's Day sneak in, but I haven't seen any Easter sneaking into the Middle East here, at least not in Saudi Arabia. Jordan's fine. They'll have a lot of great Easter services for the Christians in Jordan. I'll tell you what, though, a few years ago, you know, talk about holidays real quick before we get into the show. I was like 6 years ago, the Ministry of Vice and Virtue, or whatever it is, they were like complaining. They were like, don't have any Valentine's displays in your retail stores, right? Well, that's pretty much gone away now. That's kind of like gone away because the ladies kind of demanded it. They want their Valentine's gifts, guys. But now we're up into Easter, and I'll tell you what, it's a late Easter this year. Well, to put it succinctly, everybody, it's hot here. I mean, really hot. 97 degrees and a breeze that could be seen whipping up some flags up on the buildings about 20 feet above the street level. But I'll be honest, there was like no breeze on the street level. I'm like, what's going on here? I'm like baking, and there's no breeze whatsoever to move the air. But if you look up about 20 feet, you can literally see the flags flapping away. I'm like, dang, there's nothing down here. Not even the trees and the brush down below were moving. But up above, I'm like, I guess I got to crawl from roof to roof to roof if I want a little breeze up here. But I don't think I can be doing that anymore. Current temperature, we're sitting at around 95 degrees now after going up to 97. By show's end, we should be down to about 87 degrees. And the evening, of course, is going to be very, very, very pleasant, with the bulk of the evening temperatures remaining in the 80s. We'll hit 79 around 11, 75 by 1. And we're actually going to be going down to a reasonably cool 66 degrees in the hour before sunrise. So it's going to be a nice evening, even if the day is hot. We're going to see a little bit of a cooling trend going out into next Tuesday. Monday's going to be heck of a blustery day. Not a cool day, a blustery day. It's supposed to be quite windy come Monday. But I'll tell you what, I'm for the most part done here. I've just wrapping things up now. I'm in the final wrap-up phase. Still got a few hours of work to do, basically, and then start packing and then getting ready. I will be here through the week, though. We're asked to stay through the end of this week, and then we're all free to jam out of here. So I'm looking forward to jamming out and getting home to a little bit of a sad affair with our Bruiser having died last week. We're going to have a little tribute to Bruiser, a little special cat report. So Blackbird, our sponsor of the cat report, you got a special report coming today, dude. We're going to talk a little bit of esoterica surrounding what happened to Bruiser and just some of the paranormal stuff that kind of goes on around this parts of the world. And there's lots of this black magic going on in the world, quite frankly. If you're aware of it, if you go into the Thelema crafts, if you go into the Crowleyan systems, if you go actually into Jewish Kabbalah at the highest levels, these people, they have within their system some black magicians. Of course, when you get into the child sacrifice and things like that, you're talking about a very, 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 very dark system that is ruling over this planet. But that is not the message of the weekend, because the message of this weekend is the holiday of Easter, of new beginnings, of turning towards the light, of rising towards and regenerating towards something positive. And I think that's where we're going to start this show today, is really talking about this issue. Because when we looked at what happened this week, here we are going on into the spring season. We've got the Easter now coming up this week. And on April 15th, we saw the Cathedral of Notre Dame burning. Now, there was an interesting thing that came out that Nostradamus was said to have predicted that this would happen, something to the effect that I don't have the quatrain in front of me, but basically something about Jupiter and Aries and Taurus or something to that effect. And anyways, they're talking about essentially this idea. And then Macron is kind of like mimicking things out of the quatrain that called about this. So we are looking at perhaps a bit of black magic about and surrounding the Church of Notre Dame. We've had something like 875 Catholic churches vandalized. And it's not just vandalism. You know, the police, I was reading some of the police reports coming out of France, and they're talking a lot about the vandalism. It's all economic motivated. You know, people are stealing like chalices and books and pew, whatever they can get their hands. It's not nailed down, and they're selling it out there in the open market. But you come on, you're talking about spreading human feces on walls. This has nothing to do with economic gain. And when I was doing some research on the Notre Dame Cathedral burning, the first thing we want to remember here is that although the spire was lost, and that was a tragic loss, the way this thing was constructed, it was actually constructed with two roofs. And so when the main spire fell, it broke through the second roof, because it was the first roof. The outer roof burned. The inner roof, when the spire fell, the inner roof collapsed. It failed also. And so we had a big hole right in the center, but the main structure itself, especially the interior work, remains. Now, of course, I maintain that a lot of this information is encoding some of our ancient knowledge, embedding it into stone. And no matter who you are, from where you are, if you really study and look into this architecture, there is something about it that will resonate with you. Now, me, I love ancient cathedral type of work. You know, when I was back in LA, I think we had one Presbyterian church on Wilshire Boulevard that was built around 1932 that had this Gothic cathedral feel to it. I love this traditional form of architecture, the way they build it, the way they could craft the stone. And quite frankly, these are amazing artifices and contributions of Western civilization to the world. Regardless of whether you think Christianity is this or that, and I'm hearing all the arguments, I get it. But the point we want to raise here is that one of the main ones, besides the Vatican, is the Church of, or the Cathedral of Notre Dame. It is right at the heart of Christianity, and people are commenting about that over here. It's like, hey, it's like this war against Christianity has been taken right into the heart of the Christian world. And it's like, yeah, that's actually very true. Of course, you've got all the problems with the Vatican. 80% of your Vatican priests is estimated now in some circles. I'm not going to say it's really that high, but there are rumors of like huge numbers. I've heard 80% that are actually global homos. So, you know, you're talking about a very destructive group of people, a very destructive force on the planet. This global homo agenda is one of the most cancerous, destructive elements currently going on Earth, and it's exceedingly totalitarian when we look at their behavior. I mean, they demand absolute subservience to their ways of life and their ideals, and they will smash and destroy anything that tries to get in their way. So, you know, I saw some comments, by the way, about the global homo agenda. So, you know what? 5 years ago, I was pretty much agnostic towards you guys in the global homo arena. But quite frankly, now I'm pissed off at it. You know, I'm hearing people starting to say that the global homos are becoming so abusive that as far as they're concerned, we need to re-regulate homosexuality to the point that where we make it illegal and we can just cite all the health reasons that are going on. And if you don't like it, that's too bad, because you're just imposing yourself on everybody equally. So it's really not about your preferences. It's not about your way of life. It's not about, free love and all this stuff. It's really just a political agenda to tyrannize the rest of us who want nothing to do with your debauched, sick behavior. That would be people talking out there. I've actually heard that type of phrase. Anyways, it's Easter. And Easter, of course, is this idea of regeneration. And, you know, the way the Christians have worshiped it, it's basically a case where Jesus dies, he is resurrected, and he comes back. And that is, of course, the regeneration. And, of course, this regeneration theme is all over history when it comes to the story of Easter. And there's a guy by the name of Dr. Tony Nugent. Guys, I'm going to raise this. My eyes are too bad to read this small script anymore. Getting old, guys. Getting old, and I've only got one eye to work with, so it's like, that's not cool. All right. Now, there's a guy, his name is Dr. Tony Nugent. He's a teacher of theology and religious studies at Seattle University. He's also a Presbyterian minister. Now, one of the few sects that I actually respect are the Presbyterians. I mean, I'm not saying I don't respect everybody out there just because you're Christian. I'm just saying the Presbyterians, they are the old Western school system, and they do represent within their class, I know, some resistance to this Jewish hellhole that's being created all around us. And so what he says is that the Easter story itself goes all the way back to Samaria in a legend about Damuzi, also known as Tammuz, and his wife Inanna, which is also known as Ishtar. And it is an epic myth back then, and it's called the Descent of Inanna. And it was found on an inscribed cuneiform clay tablet dating all the way back to 2100 BC. Now, when Tammuz dies, Ishtar is grief-stricken and follows him to the underworld. And in this underworld, she enters through seven gates, and her worldly attire is removed, and she's naked and bowed low, it says, and she is judged, killed, and then hung on display. And in her absence, the earth loses its fertility, crops cease to grow, and animals stop reproducing. So unless something is done, all life on earth will end. So as the story continues, Inanna was missing for 3 days, and her assistant goes to other gods for help. And finally, one of them named Enki creates two creatures who carry the plant of life and the water of life. You might have heard that in the bread of life and the wine turned into the body and blood of Christ. You may have heard this symbolism. And that was sprinkled on Inanna and Damuzi, resurrecting them and giving them the power to return to the earth as the light of the sun for 6 months. And then after 6 months, Tammuz and Inanna return back to the depths, and that becomes the winter cycle. So this is, of course, just one of many stories about this idea of death and regeneration and dying and all of this fun stuff from the winter months and then coming to the spring months. You've got the resurrection of the Egyptian Horus. You've got the story of Mithras, which was a huge sect at the time. And you've got the tale of Dionysus. And if you're not familiar with Dionysus, the name Dennis actually comes from Dionysus. I'm actually named after the Greek god of wine. And from the story of Dionysus, we actually get the word dictionary, because all of this often reveals certain codes of how language has been fabricated through the ages. So, you know, the mother Isis suckles the baby Dictus, not with her breast, but with her finger. And of course, the tale there is that you know, the dictionary grows by sticking your finger into the book, and you are able to acquire more and more and more words to your vocabulary. Hence, your diction and your dictionary are all tied to this myth. Now, among some of these stories are prevailing themes, of course, of this fertility, conception, renewal, descent into darkness, and the triumph of light over darkness, or good over evil. And this is an issue that actually, without getting too much into the religiosity sermonology of it, but it's a key issue here, because we have to factor in that the burning of the Church of Notre Dame or the Cathedral of Notre Dame was a ritual to further plunge the West into this world of darkness. Now, that seems to be what Nostradamus was trying to say, or at least people interpret Nostradamus is trying to say, in one of the quatrains now being attributed to this recent event this past week. And we had been talking Thursday a little bit about Notre Dame, and Notre Dame being the north. And the north, when we take the word north and we reverse it, is the word throne. And I'm talking about a throne like a seat of power of a monarch, a throne. And if you know how Isis is often portrayed, she is often portrayed with a throne, a seat or a throne as her headdress. So what we are looking at here is this endless cycle of war against this sacred feminine side of the deity, in other words, by these Jewish systems. And it is something that Christianity never was able to eviscerate, because of course they treat Mary with such high esteem. I remember talking to Masons, Freemasons, years and years and years ago, probably 15 years ago, maybe even more, 16 years ago, and they were talking about something like their followers of the widow's wife, or the widower, the, you know, their followers of the widower, and they said the widower is Mary. I'm like, dude, you really don't know your history very well, do you? And these guys are like, they're well-meaning, I think, you know, for what it's worth, right? And they're telling me, though, the widower is Mary, and Jesus is the one who died. I'm like, well, Mary never married Jesus, you morons. The widower is Isis, the Notre Dame, the Lady of the North, Ishtar, Inanna. It all is linked here, you guys. And Horus is the sun, and Osiris is the one who died, which makes Isis, Osiris is the one who died, which makes Isis the widower. And the Masons, they never figured it out. It's like, dudes, how difficult. But there are sects out there that have linked Christianity and Freemasonry together, and these people will believe what they say. Now, an interesting part about these tales is when you go all the way back to your Old Testament, and even those who had purportedly come out of Egypt, there's an interesting passage that comes out of Jeremiah. And Jeremiah 44, to be exact. Open your Bibles, everybody, and let's pray. I'll pass everything around later. No, but Jeremiah 44:17-19, and what it says here is that, as for the word that thou hast spoken unto us in the name of the Lord, we will not hearken unto thee. But basically what they're saying is, look, ever since we stopped worshiping the Queen of Heaven, and that is the only place in the Bible or the Torah where this is found, they say when we stopped worshiping and imbibing and sending incense up to the Queen of Heaven, we have faced nothing but darkness. We have faced nothing but evil and death. And therefore, they said, we will not go back to worship your Jewish God, because your Jewish God only brings us evil, death, and despair, and famine, and sword, and death by the sword. And then they go on, the women go on to say, and when we burned incense to the Queen of Heaven and poured out drink offerings unto her, did we make her cakes to worship her and pour out drink offerings unto her without our men? So they're saying, look, we're all in this together. It's not just the women doing this. Of course, we're all doing this. So it all harkens back to this ancient, if you start to link all of these together, again, even the Catholics will call at times the Mary, you know, the mother of Jesus, the Queen of Heaven. They even have their own patches because you can't escape how the construct was all put together. How much time do I got? I'm not even going to get through this story, guys. oh well. So continuing on, just to try to finish this up real quick. We are at war right now with this very, very evil force. And what it wants to do is bring about death and destruction to everybody. And I was talking to somebody before the show today, and he was saying, you know what? It's the great time where Jews celebrate the mass murder of the firstborn. And he says, I really hate Jews because I'm firstborn, which means that every day, every Passover, they're celebrating the death of me. And they want to see me dead because they think if they're enslaved, it's okay to kill everybody. And I'm like, you know, now that you think about it, you know, I'm actually a firstborn too. I'm actually a firstborn male from my, you know, from the mother. So, yeah, I'm like, you know what? I never thought of it that way. I didn't even see, because I was adopted, guys. So I'm like not seeing myself as the firstborn. But the truth of the matter is, yeah, I would be on the Jewish kill list. So these guys are psychopaths. Screw you guys, you know, seriously. You're sitting there worshiping, killing people like me because I'm firstborn. Because, oh, my goodness, you're so enslaved. See, that's Jewish way of their regeneration ritual is they're talking about how, oh, we got new life again because we're no longer slaves. And of course, as we can all see, we are actually slaves to Jews and their debt conspiracy and their assault on our freedom of speech and freedom of expression and freedom of association, etc. So we are always often the ones who are attacked by Jews first. And at some point, we obviously must make a spirited defense or Jews will kill us. It's that simple. That's kind of how I see it. That seems to be their philosophy. Otherwise, they should not be going after Pesach or Passover. Of course, their Passover coincides with Easter, which is where the sun passes over the equator. But don't tell Jews that because they just won't seem to grasp the fact that their system equally is all about our system. But they've just turned it into a macabre, sick display of depravity where they think killing people en masse is a glorious thing for the Jewish people. And how do you really correct that in a culture, guys? I don't know how to do it. Seriously, I don't know how to do that. If I got a mass culture that thinks mass murdering people is a divinic thing to do, guys, you got a problem, man. I mean, how are you going to deal with such irrational insanity? Psychopaths on the warpath. Ah, somebody just chimed in. Their firstborn son, too. Yeah. Hey, it's firstborn son call time. Telephones are working, everybody. I did test them. 1-323-275-1314. It's the Fetch Inside the Eye live on an Easter holiday weekend, 2019. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody. Welcome back. It is the Fetch Inside the Eye live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Right here, it's Saturday, April the 20th. I think it's maybe Germany. Is it Hitler's birthday? If so, I mean, people are going to be all over that one. I think it's April 20th. I think that's his birthday. Something like that. I know he was an Aries type of guy. I think it was April the 20th. Wow, I never thought of that. But anyways, late Easter, everybody. Again, I think it doesn't get any later than this. Because the way Easter works is it's the first Sunday after the first full moon of spring. And from what I was told back in my catechism / Christian Sunday school days, it's precisely this way because Irish priests absolutely refuse to allow the church to change it. That's when I was told the Irish are actually responsible for maintaining this system. It's always been that way in the olden of days, and the church tried to change it. They could not do it. Another interesting fact about Easter, everybody, is Ostara. Of course, it comes from the German goddess Ostara. And that is purported by some magazines back in the turn of the century to be the root of the country Austria, which would then be one of those countries named after a particular goddess. So, of course, a lot of our ancient pagan, I'm not anti-pagan because remember pagan, you know, I never got into that story. I tried to finish it last week and I got Thursday and I got diverted. Pro-pagan, duh. Pro means pro, right? It's for something. You're pro this, you're pro life, you're pro that. That means you're for something. Pagan is P-A-G-A-N, which is pro pagan, and then da is an ending. So propaganda is really the root of the word propaganda is pagan. And so therefore, it's actually inverse duplicity, everybody. There's a lot of truths within the pagan systems. And one of them is the actual crafting of the word pagan itself. A lot of people really don't understand it. But it's very cleverly crafted because our encoded systems tell us a little story. P is, of course, the male phallus, everybody. The penis, right? The P is. And then AG is a 1 and a 7. The 1 and the 7 becomes what? A 17, which is the letter Q, which is the fertilized egg. And then an AN is a 1 plus 14, and 1 plus 14 is 15, which is the letter O. So there you get it. Guys, it's male and female coming together to create life through the fertilized egg, which is what this season is all about. So therefore, the word pagan is actually a code for basically the generation of life. And of course, being vilified through history by the Jewish people, how the pagans are so easily, are so evil. Well, how is it that male and females coming together to create life is evil? I never understood that one from the Jewish people, and they are on this trick even today where they are trying to vilify men. They are trying to vilify women. They are trying to vilify boys, girls. They are trying to create any number of genders other than male and female. They're trying to say that men can have children. See, look, it's disgusting. It's perverse, quite frankly. All just science freak stuff. It won't happen in the natural order. Without science aiding these people, there is no way they can sustain their system. No way, no how. So remember, pagan guys is not so evil after all. P is the male. AQ is 17, which is the letter Q, which is the fertilized egg. And AN is 1 plus 14, which is the O, which is the feminine. So O plus P creates the Q. And that, dear friends, is the story of the Beltane tree, where they wrap the DNA around the tree, you know, and of course at the top of that tree would then be the Q, or the fertilized egg. But hey, just some little secrets about some of these rituals, because, you know, the Jews cannot come up with anything that's actually clever enough to actually make its way across the world. Our systems, those of us from the Western esoteric schools, our knowledge far surpasses whatever Jews can create. Our works of art far surpasses anything that Jews can create. In fact, the reason why Jews hate everything that we do so much is because, quite frankly, they're jealous. They can do nothing. They're actually a very primitive tribe, folks. Don't think they're actually all this genius in this. They're not. They're a very primitive people. If you took away their usury, if you took away the fact that they have the ability to buy everything up because they can basically steal everything that is not nailed down, you're missing, quite frankly, everything about what Jews are really about on a cultural foundation. And I'm talking at the very, very core of that. And we got actually a story a little bit later to share about that. I was going to bring it up Thursday. I didn't get to it, but I'll get to it later today. This is listener-sponsored and supported radio. It does rely upon your donations to help keep the network alive, up and running. And quite frankly, we all need to be on a platform, everybody. So do what you can to support the platform. Without your support, we are just not going to be able to get out there and do what we do twice a week. We're producing 5 hours of content every week, and most of it is pretty fresh. I go back and listen to it, everybody. It's generally pretty good content, and we need, quite frankly, a platform from which to operate. So please, that's your Easter giving now. Don't forget to give a little bit over to revolution.radio just to keep the platform alive, up, and running. Now, time for the ITEL Cat Report. It is proudly sponsored by North Cat Kalaki Trading Post. Good services and solutions for all creatures great and small. It's independently located at the corner of Walk and Don't Walk and by Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club, a radio show hosted by Frederick C. Blackburn. He's an NSA whistleblower, a 9/11 truth advocate, a former 32-degree Mason, and a former North Carolina House candidate. And you can hear Blackbird Nine's Breakfast Club every Wednesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Spreaker Radio Network. And for more information, be sure to visit Blackbird9TradingPost.org. That's Blackbird. I'm actually typing it in. Blackbird9TradingPost.org. How did I do? Blackbird 9 Trading Posts. Oh, it's Posts with an S. Posts with an S. I think that's it. Let me try the S there, guys. I hate to think I might be giving this to you wrong. Frederick, if I was, man, you got to correct me because you know me. Blackbird 9 Trading Posts with an S. And I don't see your tagline there. I was going to give your tagline, dude. You got to give me... I got to get the tagline. I got to probably go over to Grism for the tagline. But something about something like something knowledge sphere at a time or something like that. Where is his tagline? I'm looking for your tagline, dude. Anyways, let me give you the story of Bruiser. I'm not so choked up today as I was last week. As you know, Bruiser, our blind cat, died a week and a half ago. Very sad, quite frankly. We don't know what happened, why he died so quickly, but he literally died very, very short, very, very suddenly Tuesday night, a week ago from Tuesday. And so what is that? August the 9th, right after 9 o'clock in the evening to be exact. I actually watched him kind of die in Emily's arms over a messenger communications link, IM video call. She was obviously quite distraught. I wasn't so much distraught, but I was like in shock and kind of disbelief that, oh my gosh, how did he just die? The interesting story about Bruiser is some very strange things have been going on with him that we didn't quite understand as the girls were kind of recalling and after the hysterics died down. A week before, he was given a bath. He's usually given a bath once every 2-3 weeks. Depending on the weather and depending on how dirty he is. Well, a week before, he was actually given a bath and he was absolutely completely calm. Now, normally, when he is given a bath, he would scream up a storm. I mean, literally cry up a storm. And mind you, he was a blind cat. So the best way to give him a bath was just to put him on a tiny little stool that was only like 3 inches off the ground because he couldn't see. He wouldn't go down or he just wouldn't leave because he can't see, right? So he would not... He would not leave that stool. So you just give him a bath. And then kind of once he was kind of cleaned, you would dry him up the best you can. He would scurry away a little bit angry, but he would be very lovable and clean afterwards. And he didn't cry one little bit a week before this. Then that particular day, he just slept like a baby with Emily from like 3 to 5 p.m. He just slept like a baby, like, what's with you, Bruiser? Why are you behaving like this? So, strange behavior. About 5 o'clock in the afternoon, we have some birds, and they absolutely were terrified from what the girls are saying. They were like screaming and chirping up a storm, absolutely terrified, and they were going on for about a half hour. Now, we have had within our area and within the circles I travel with some of these paranormal things where you get these spirits coming through that are not necessarily beneficial. We've dealt with this in our own way, but we have had this happen to us. So what had been happening the 3 previous days before this event happened, Bruiser had been trying to escape. We had these, and we still do, but we had lined our balcony with all of these pots and plants so that he couldn't just jump up and fall down on the other side. Normally, he would then go up to the roof. I can't tell you how many times I've gone onto the roof, and I say, come on, Bruiser, you know it's not safe there. Get down, you know? So, and he would just, like, meow meows at me, and we miss his meow meows, by the way. And he would climb down and come on, waddle his way over, because he's blind. He can't really walk cleanly. He would waddle his way back and meow meows the whole time and go downstairs. He had managed very well. He knew the house. He could get around. But for 3 days, he was trying to escape. Now, 2 weeks before, as you know, we lost one eye. He just disappeared also. It's like maybe he sent something. Who knows? He's gone. We haven't seen one eye for now 3 weeks. And then that night, about 8 o'clock, we had a lot of guests at the house. And Bruiser was still downstairs with everybody. And the birds were just chirping up a massive storm like they were panicked. And everyone was like concerned. What's going on with your birds, right? What's going on with your birds? And some of the guests say, well, maybe your cat is scaring the birds. And they're like, no, the cats and the birds know each other. They're not going to get panicked. It's not going to be the birds scared of Bruiser. Bruiser wouldn't even pay attention anyways. He never cared. It was not what he does. He just doesn't care, right? So about 8:35 or so, the birds died down. They were like panicked for about a half hour. And then Spikers. Spikers is one of our really, he's now kind of like now in the house now, everybody who are big Spikers fans, Spikers now in the house now. And so Spikers, what he had done is he, about 8 to 8:30, he had actually found a way to get into the house. Now, the way he did this, he's like a Jedi cat. There's this tiny little 1.5-inch ledge that goes around and wraps around the front part of my house. And then from this little 1.5-inch ledge, you can go to the front window. And as a cat, you would then be able to go through the front window because there's no screen there, or there's an opening where the screen you can come through. What this guy, little guy, had done, he had gone along this ledge around, and he had gotten into the house, and he was trying to get the girl that takes care of the cats, or Bruiser for sure, the one that helps around the house, trying to get her attention. Kept clawing her, pawing her, like, come, come. And it's like, Bruiser, what are you doing here? Or not Bruiser, Spike, what are you doing inside the house, dude? You're going to be in trouble because, you know, maybe Bruiser's going to come. And Spikers refused to leave. He literally refused to leave. So what they did is they picked him up and they put him back outside because they didn't know how he got inside the house. They had no idea. They thought maybe he snuck in with the guests. They had no idea. Well, about 9 o'clock, they saw again, the guests had left about 8:50, something like that. And 8:55 like this. And then around 9 o'clock, Spikers was now back inside the window and like getting everybody's attention. So Emily walked over to the window like, Spikers, what are you doing? How did you get here? Because they had to walk along this little 1.5-inch ledge to actually get there. So as she walked over to the window ledge, she saw the shadow because there's a big streetlight off to like 11 o'clock high, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock high. From my house. It's a new street lamp. It's very, very bright. She saw the shadow of Bruiser going down. So what she did is she went upstairs looking for Bruiser, obviously concerned, could not find Bruiser, went to the edge, heard Bruiser wincing in pain because he had just fallen off the roof, ran back down and then picked him up. But by then he was pretty much gone. And so he was not, there was no trauma, no blood. Everything seemed to be fine, no broken bones. Nothing seemed to be anything about him. Everything seemed very, very fine. So they got him in the house, and then he went into a convulsion, and basically he died within about 30 seconds. He was gone. So he was still warm. He was still alive when she picked him up and brought him in. So anyways, I got through most of it. So it was a very difficult time, but very, very, very strange around the house. So what I have done is, of course, with the spring and the regeneration and all that, I have actually told them you repaint the entire house inside, the entire house. That chore is about done. I said, you get rid of all the old stuff you don't need. That's, you don't need attached to, get rid of it. You call because we are good friends with the top, Catholic priest inside the country. He's a good friend of ours. We have, as you guys know, some reasonable relations out there in the Middle East. So I said, you call him and go ahead and have him give a re-blessing of the house. And then you get some frankincense and myrrh, the stuff they brought to Jesus, and you burn it and you clear out the energy of that house. Just clear it out. And so I'm not sure how well of a good job they've done because I, as you guys know, some of you know, with the development of the Isisian codes, you are dealing with a very high level nature of occult information. People, they actually kill you for this type of stuff, guys. But because of who I am and what I do, see, when you talk about a fetch, a lot of you probably don't know that a fetch is the highest level of spiritual being in the Germanic systems. A fetch is from the realm of Asgard, which is basically the world of form. So whenever you had the ancient priests bringing down knowledge and trying to name things and give things their proper names, these were done through channeling through what was called fetches. Fetches are also, though, your spirit double, like your ka in the Egyptian. So it's also very, very bad if you ever meet your fetch, because that means you're basically about ready to die and he's come to retrieve you and take you back to your proper spiritual realm. So as I had developed the Isisian codes, you were dealing a lot with higher level, let's just call it information. So, you know, I'm talking about meditations and astral projections and stuff like this. It's not just like willy-nilly you do this. It takes a lot of effort to do and put something like this thing together. So as part of the process, of course, you would have to learn protecting techniques and all this stuff that goes on in that realm that I no longer deal with. By the way, guys, I stopped dealing with this back in, from a hardcore stuff, 87, 88, back when they tried to get me and channel me into Jewish Kabbalah and Thelema and Crowley. And mind you, I had some very complicated Crowleyan works and I had gone through it and done my analysis. And I said, no, this stuff's not good, man. This stuff is just not good. So I left that scene. Now you have to understand that these people, they are going to often recruit some of the smarter people on the planet, some of the higher IQs, and they're going to feed them particular information and knowledge sets to make them feel superior to you. Because ultimately, what these sects are all about is the destruction of mankind itself. When you hear the Thelemites, and maybe you've got some Thelemites here, I don't have too many friends in the Thelemite systems. We never really got along because they never understood Crowley the way I did. You know, Crowley used to sell himself as the beast, Crowley, I'm the beast. And I said, look, guys, that Y in the center is a hinge. Do you understand? It's a hinge. And then when you take C-R-O-W-L-E and you use the summative value of each of those letters, it equals 666. I said, therefore, that Y is a hinge. And they're like, oh, you get it. Okay, whatever, dudes. Whatever. I ain't got time to deal with you right now. See, they are here to destroy. And Crowley, he died basically a heroin addict, the modern day equivalent of a crack addict, destitute on the streets. Destitute, folks, on the streets. And these people that come to you or me and they say, well, Thelema this and that. Look, your great guru died on the streets, basically a beggar and a homeless guy. How can you tell me your system is good and positive and generative and good for people? It's not. It takes, it steals. It's a vampire energy. No, no, no. And they go, do as thou wilt. I said, no, it's do as thou wilt. Because if you use the term do as thou wilt, wilt means to shrivel up and die. It wilts like a flower. And that's exactly what Crowley did. He did as he wilted. And he wilted down to the point where he was actually homeless on the street, basically the equivalent of a modern day crack addict. This isn't something that's positive. You have to understand, a lot of our leadership follows either one of two sects, Noahide Kabbalah or Crowleyan metaphysics. Think about that. This is your enemy. These people, they don't care. They don't care about anything but their own self-importance. It's all about them. It's all about them. And you can see it in the rituals of today. Because here you have the Easter celebration where you have, in this case, the story of a Jesus dying on the cross and resurrecting and giving himself to the whole of humanity. But for Jews, it's let's go kill every firstborn on this planet so that only we Jews can be free. It's disgusting, folks. This isn't a religion, and we should stop treating it as a religion and understand here how powerful they are. With just one word, they can call you an anti-Semite and everything is destroyed for you. But tell me again, is this a generative force or is this a force for good on this planet? It's not a force for good on this planet, folks. And you know, with the burning of the Church of Notre Dame, it gave us a chance to go back and really study what Jewish rabbis are saying relative to Christianity. Now, we all know Jews hate Christians, especially at the very core of Judaism. Again, I'm not talking about the idiots in the Jewish community that want to just play plausible denial crap. I don't care about those people because they're not going to do anything. But guaranteed, those at the core are. And they have an admonition. Before they retreat back to Israel, it is their duty to burn Christian churches on the way out. Keep that in mind as you move forward and fight this great evil we are faced with. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Back with more right after this. All right, everybody. Welcome back. It's The Fetch, Inside the Eye, live intelligent media for the politically aware. Again, it's a good Easter holiday weekend right now, I guess you could call it that. We're a little bit on the religious slash esoteric bent today for some reason. I'm not sure why. Actually, I am kind of, I'm sure why, because it's the Easter holiday and it's really within our pagan, us in the West. We should be proud of our heritage and Easter and the Easter egg hunt. I remember years ago when I had my son, right? And he's like, I don't know, 2 years old, hobbling around, not hobbling, but I don't know what you say it, waddling around. I think waddling is a good word, waddling around, still in his diapers. And I took him out to my parents' church back then, all the way back then, and gave him his basket. And they placed the eggs out on the Easter egg hunt in a big field. And I remember him just trying to run around, trying to find, I think he got like maybe 3 to 4 eggs. And sometimes the big kids would take one right before he could get to it. And I'm like, well, okay, dude, what can you say? That's competition right now. And you're kind of young. The big guy should have let you have it, but what can we do? And I remember thinking to myself, even all the way back then, it's like, you know what? Jews could never create something like this. Jews could never create something good like this. They just can't do it. They can't do it. They don't know how. They're all about what's in it for me? I'm a Jew. What can I steal from you? That's kind of what Jews are all about. In my opinion, of course. Again, don't worry, guys. We've met plenty of Jews, quote unquote, out there. We'll put Jews in quotes who aren't so nasty and aren't so mean. But when it comes to the actual culture, the actual core of the system, we're not wrong. We have them pegged. They built nothing through history, nothing through time. All they bring us is death, chaos, and despair, and that's what they're bringing us today. A lot of debauchery, a lot of really souls. I mean, come on. The opiate crisis is a Jewish thing. Literally, it's a Jewish thing, folks. It's a Jewish thing. I mean, you're talking about mass murder by Jews. You know, I think we lose something like 170,000 people a year, 110,000 people a year due to just prescription drugs, you know, just drugs that just don't work and kill people. And then I think we lose like another 170,000 a year in quote unquote medical accidents. And so we're talking about 170, 270, almost 300,000 people, half a million people get, you know, every year, 300,000 people, 330,000 people are going to die because basically a medical system that is so weaponized, they will force you to take your vaccines. They will literally force you to it. Literally, they're saying, if you don't take the vaccines, you can't educate your children. What type of whacked out people are this? Seriously, you can't have an education because you're not vaccinated because we didn't give you Jews some money. And then you're protected from lawsuits and we see all the damage you're causing our kids and all of these. I remember arguing with this Jewish pediatrician. I'm like, screw you, dude. Seriously, screw you. He was a former helicopter pilot in the Navy, and he liked to brag about how, oh, can you fly a helicopter on the deck of a little ship with it bobbing and weaving and hopping in the heavy seas? Can you do that? I'm like, no, I probably can't do that now. But had I gone into that type of service, yeah, I could have done it, dude. It's not that difficult, okay? You're a Jew. You could do it. So could everybody else. All right. Because you Jews are terrible at this type of stuff. And how many non-Jews can do this type of stuff, dude? Stop patting yourself on the back. What I want to know is, will you fire on another Jew who's a traitor? That's what I want to know. Will you attack the state of Israel for its wars against us, the American people? That's what I want to know from you. I don't want to hear about how brave you are to land something on a ship. I don't need to hear that type of crap, because a lot of non-Jewish people have done it 100 times more than you Jews have ever done, if not thousands and thousands of times more than you Jewish people. I don't care about your little, oh, I'm a Jew and I'm so patriotic. Yeah, you didn't answer my question whether you would fire on the Israeli government. If you would fire on another Jew in a war where the United States went to war against the state of Israel. And we should, because the state of Israel is waging war on we, the American people. Oh, I tell you, chat room, InsideTheEyeLive.com. It's actually humming along. I haven't said much there. I've been there. Good conversation, as always, is going on there. Guys, about Bruiser, you know what? He wasn't the nicest looking cat. We're going to admit that. But come on, he was blind and he had no teeth. He basically had lost his half of his jaw. And I'll tell you what, he had such a fabulous, fun personality, except for other cats were around. He would just beat the heck out of any other cat that came through the door. But other than that, he was a sweetie cat, and he's kind of haunting to this day. Quite frankly, I'm kind of still haunted by him a little bit because what can I say? You know, he was a good guy. So, yeah, he wasn't the nicest looking guy, but he was quite a sweetie. Let's see, where do we want to go with the show? We're a little bit kind of moving along kind of fast here. We're going to talk a little about the Mueller report. Definitely we want to talk about the Mueller report. We've talked Notre Dame. And where we're going to go in the third hour, I'm not sure yet. I'll figure that out. But the first thing we want to do is get to something that, oh, we got a call coming in. I guess we can take the call. I hope this is going to work because we work so hard to make it work. Hi, from the 215 area code, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Good morning, Fetch.
Good morning.
Mark in Philly.
Mark in Philly. I'm thinking you're down in Alabama for some reason, man. I'm seeing. What's Alabama? 205?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. See, I used to be a telecom guy. I had like half of the numbers memorized in my head back in the day. It was hello, good, happy Easter, happy Easter, happy Ostara, whatever you want to be worshiping. Happy, whatever it is.
Well, thank you. I was listening to what you were saying about, first of all, I didn't know that you were adopted, which is interesting. And you're talking about these, you're talking about spirituality at a deeper level and all this. I also happen to be adopted in, what I'm about to bring up has to do with the Civil War. 2 years ago, I discovered, and I did not know anything about my father's side, my natural father. I discovered 2 years ago that my great-great-grandfather was in the Civil War. And he, I currently live in Philadelphia, but I'm not from here. I grew up in Missouri because my great-great-grandfather later settled in northern Arkansas. And then, so anyway, I have no family. Being that I'm adopted, I have less than 10 people that I know that are blood relatives. and in this life, by the time I came to my first family was destroyed, by alcoholism, and my second family was destroyed by a pedophile. My first family was poor. My second family was rich. While I was serving our country in the military, our adopted mother took her life because of this, which I later put together was because he was a pedophile. So anyway, but back to my great-great-grandfather, he was in the Civil War and he was out of Pennsylvania in it was September 63. And then when he went in April of, or May of 64, May 5th, he was in the Battle of the Wilderness, which was outside of Fredericksburg, Virginia. And, which is 180,000 approximately from both sides. Now it's not really pronounced in our history books because neither side won. And if no side wins, then it's like, what's the big deal, right? Well, both sides, neither side won. And it was Grant against Lee. And my great-great-grandfather was captured, on the first day of the battle. He was taken to Andersonville, Georgia. The prison of Andersonville is considered by many historians to have been the worst prison in the Civil War. 65 acres, open air prison. There was a creek running through it. 45,000 men went through the prison within weeks. Many of them, actually close to 13,000, died within weeks of entering the walls because they would get thirsty and they would drink from the stream and then they would die from disease. My great-great-grandfather survived from mid-May of 64 through the end of April 65 when they opened the prison walls, when the South had declared that they had already lost, so they just opened prison walls and let all the prisoners go. He survived hell for 11 months. And then he went on to, he went west, and he actually settled in an area of Kansas originally, which was where John Brown, it was a John Brown area. John Brown was the abolitionist. Okay. But then he then moved to northern Arkansas because he got a tract of land through the Homestead Act, 160 acres on the close to the Missouri, northern border of Arkansas. So, and what's interesting is that, growing up, and I went to a country school in southern Missouri, and, turns out that whenever, and I did well in scholastics, and I liked history. I really liked ancient history. But when it came time to talk about the Civil War, and this was from elementary school on into high school, when it came time to talk about the Civil War, something stirred up in me, and I didn't want to have a darn thing to do about it. I didn't want to talk about it. I thought it was the stupidest thing. And my classmates through the years would say, well, what's going on with you? I go, I don't know. I just don't like it. Isn't that interesting? I had no idea that my great-great-grandfather served in hell during that war. And I've come to find out that there's a guy named Benjamin on the South who was actually the one that stirred up the whole idea for the war to begin with, from what I gather. I don't know, out of Louisiana. But when I was 33, I had basically kind of a semi-breakdown experience where I actually had a traumatic experience, and I went into a dream. It was actually a nightmare, and I was walking through a field, and everywhere I looked were young men and boys suffering and dying on a battlefield, and that battlefield was the Civil War. So I'm here to tell you, I believe that we men, I believe these wars are partially designed to destroy our souls, to traumatize us. Why do men live shorter lives than women? That's the question. I believe part of it is because we carry the burden of war. We carry the horrors of war in our DNA. And I'm dealing with trauma from my early childhood, from my original family. It was a lot of abuse. And I'm still healing from that. And meanwhile, then 2 years ago, finding out about my great-great-grandfather and the traumas that he experienced. And how that came together was kind of through a fluke. I just basically one day I tried to find out information several years prior, but couldn't find anything. But then I got on Google one day, and in 3 days time, I found out a whole lot of information. I was querying for several days.
You're lucky.
So anyway,
you're lucky you had Google, man. Because I remember when I was doing all my research, there was no such thing as the internet, man. We were still doing it the old-fashioned way. You know, go to the library. You know how I used to find information at the library? I swear, it's a true story. As I'm looking for certain information, I would walk along the books, and I'm talking about LA Library is huge, and I would just wave my hand about 3-4 inches away from the books. And then when my hand got cold, I would stop. Literally, I would stop, and then I would pull that book out. And then, sure enough, I would find what I needed to find within that book. It was kind of an interesting technique.
Yeah, I've developed from when I was young, the only thing that saved my life and saved my soul is that I developed that extrasensory perception to be able to survive trauma and to basically step outside of oneself's situation while the body goes through trauma.
Correct.
and then represents the body with the soul.
Yeah, so, I can relate, man. This is all part of everything. I actually think my little bruiser, I think he was taken by a spirit. I actually think that. I think something came along and just took him. By the way,
now, and by the way, when I was, I sought support, I didn't know that I could even go to the VA. I happened to, because I was a veteran, and whenever this second family was destroyed, basically, our father, basically, after my return from the military, and I was in the military when it happened, when our adopted mother took her life, and she was like a Mother Teresa, Joan of Arc all in one. She was a tremendous human being. Incredible. And she had everything except that she didn't have the love of her partner who she thought loved her, and she tried and tried and tried, and she always showed love toward him. But anyway, he was a pedophile all along. Now, God didn't allow me to put that two and two together until after he died, because I didn't fathom that there was a demon right in front of me. He never wanted to be close to me, never wanted to be my father. I was tugging at his coattails at age 11, asking him what a mortgage was, right? What's a mortgage, Pop? He wouldn't tell me. He was incredibly wealthy, okay? He wouldn't share anything about the ropes of life with me, how to find my way, nothing. Why? And I always took it upon myself to say, well, it must be something wrong with me. So I try and try and try again. I excelled in school. I excelled in sports. It didn't matter. Okay. In the wild, lions, the male lions, I learned that they will attack their cub, if the mother doesn't defend, and they will destroy that cub. I say that I thought mankind was a little bit better than that, but, you know, than the beast of the wild, but I guess not. So what do I have left with that? I have left nothing. Okay. But anyway, I sought support in the VA system because I am a veteran. I didn't even call myself a veteran because I didn't serve during war, but I did excel while I was in the military as well, by the way. Anyway, so I went to the VA and sought help. And so what I needed was PTSD counseling, but they wouldn't give it to me. I didn't even know what PTSD was. But yeah. That's really,
and nowadays it's dangerous to get it because you get put on these drugs and then you're pretty well screwed.
Yeah. So the deal is, and on that note, I didn't know what PTSD was, but I've been told that I actually have complex PTSD because I was traumatized repeatedly from when I was young. And then when our mother died, that threw me for a loop. And I mean, it was devastating to me.
Then you throw in, Mark, you throw in the metaphysical channels going back to the grandfather. It really makes a nice soup, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So... and to acknowledge the VA is that what they wouldn't give me counseling. You know, I didn't know how all that worked with mental health and things. So I went along with, I thought these people knew what they were doing and they cared, right? Well, there wasn't any counseling involved, but I guarantee you there was a lot of medicine. They throw you a drug here and a drug there. So what ended up happening is they prescribed me antidepressants. Well, it turns out that the antidepressants they were prescribing me were SSRIs, which 15 years later, after going through about a half a dozen different ones through different VAs, trying to help with the depression, major depression, to come to find out that these SSRIs, and I was having wild side effects on these drugs, and I'd report back to them, and then they'd switch me to another one. Reluctantly, they'd switch me to another one because they thought I was making the side effects up. Later, I find out through a third party that I'm a poor metabolizer. I lack a certain enzyme where my body can't even process those drugs. And when you look it up, I looked it up at the University of Pennsylvania electronic data system at the University of Pennsylvania medicine system, and come to find out that there's peer-reviewed articles from around the world from this last decade or beyond where poor metabolizers should not be prescribed SSRIs. And by the way, we are 10% of the Caucasian population are poor metabolizers. But does the VA do a pretest to make sure that they're giving drugs, you know, that they're not giving drugs that might actually cause harm? Yeah.
Yeah, so, let's move anyway, this along. Yeah, let's.
So they're putting what they basically did, Fetch, is they put me at the risk of death repeatedly, and they didn't give a damn, and they still don't give a damn.
No, nope.
They didn't give a damn when I brought it back to their attention to bring it to their attention, and then you go down the and by the way, the majority and the largest medical system in the United States is the VA healthcare system, and the majority of veterans that go to the VA go to the mental health clinic. 3/4 of the guys or gals that go to the VA go to the mental health
clinic.
Who is running the mental health system of the VA?
Obviously, our favorite Jewish tribe.
Exactly. All the names. Go down the hall and you look at the titles on the door. All the names. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I find that quite, it was Frank that brought this awareness to me about, you know, the tribe being in control of so many things. And I had never had any direct confrontation or bad dealings with these people directly, but I realized that they're in everything, and they've infiltrated everything, and they are a destructive force. On that note, there are some that say, "Oh no, there's some good Jews." So I don't know. Are there? I really don't know. I mean, who would want to call themselves a Jew if they, you know, they have to know the bad things that their fellow tribesmen had done through the millennia. I mean, come on. I wouldn't want to be known as one if I knew that. So, but anyway, I'll leave you with that. I just wanted to share a few things about that I believe that we are spiritual beings, and we do, and I guess they call this epigenetics, where you may carry on through the DNA, carry on memories, the memories of our forefathers, pass through the memories or even the traumas, and having these flashbacks of the Civil War out of the blue, and I'm like, what in the world is going on? You know. So anyway.
All right. Thanks so much for the comment. Thanks for sharing. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks so much. That's Mark, everybody. I couldn't seem to get the echo away, but that's Mark, everybody, out in, I think, Pennsylvania. So telephone lines 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. And how much time we got? I don't really know how much time we got. You know what I mean? I can't really see that. But let's see. It's 6:24, maybe about 2 minutes. After this, we're going to do I think we're going to go to the Oy Vey moment. We haven't done our Oy Vey moment for the day. Been kind of blowing through the show, though, quite frankly. It's been going pretty fast. So, again, if you'd like to call, again, 1-323-275-1314. I'm kind of distracted by the chat room today. It's just like buzzing along and some pretty good information and kind of discussion going on in there. Literally talking about the destructive force of Jews, you know, like I don't know his first name, but something Samuel, a Jewish guy, talked in 1942. He basically openly said, look, we Jews have killed 100 million of you Christians so far. We're not done, and we're not going to stop until we get a world of our own. And, you know, Mark talking about how you have all these Jews lined up inside of the VA hospitals. And quite frankly, inside the VA hospitals, they don't care. Their job is to kill you. It keeps the expenses for the American people down. If you are not alive, we don't have to pay for you anymore. So the faster they can kill you, the better. 704 area code. Hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Life.
And who better to have in that role other than Jews?
There you go.
Hey, Dennis, great show Thursday, man. It was great. I was in and out of the car on my way home, but I probably missed 20 minutes or so, but what I did here was awesome and really fired up. And did you cover the story where Ann Coulter put out this article, and in it there's this book?
We don't. Hold it or call back, because we're going into a break probably about 3 minutes. Just hold your thoughts. It's the Fetch. Frank's on the line. Frank, you're going to have to hold, man, because I just announced you. Hold on, man. We're going into a break. Back with more, everybody, right after this. It's again Saturday, Easter Eve. Saturday, everybody. You know what I miss about Easter, guys? The ham the ham dinner that we would usually have. We would reserve turkey for Thanksgiving. Christmas was kind of up in the air, but always, always, always we would have a ham dinner for Easter. And I kind of miss those ham days. It would be kind of nice to get a ham. When I go to Jordan in the week or so, I'm going to go make a ham breakfast or a ham dinner, I think, just to heck with it. Again, joining us from North Carolina is none other than Frank. And I think he's just coming back in now. Hi, Frank. Are you back with us?
I'm back. Sorry, I didn't want to miss any of the show. I thought I'd gotten disconnected.
No problem. I actually just potted you down so you can talk and do what you want, and you wouldn't be heard. You would be basically private. So next time you call, don't worry. If it's a break, I'll have you down so you can talk and do whatever you want. And once we're there, we'll be back. Okay. First of all, did you see that you're kind of famous, man? Did you see that video that came out? I know you're not online very much, but there is a video released by Adam Green from No More News about how callers are upset with Alex Jones for not dealing with the Jewish question. And it was basically a few callers calling in, and I think 60% of it was you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty good.
I don't know. How old is that video?
It just came out.
I don't know.
So somebody had actually, I don't know how you even find this stuff. You know what I mean? Someone's got to do the work, and I ain't got time to do that type of work. But it's like about an 11 to 12 minute video, and I swear 60% of it was you.
Yeah, I don't know. To be honest with you, you know, before this year, I don't think I ever heard of Adam Green, and I'm not real familiar with him, but I do keep hearing his name pop up more and more. I don't know who he is.
Yeah, me either. He just popped up out of nowhere. He's doing basically material that we were doing 5 years ago, but he's getting huge audiences with it. So it's like, okay, you know, it's fine. Eventually he's going to have to graduate to people like me. So it's good.
Well, I do know that the comments section, whenever I used to go to Alex Jones, on a rare occasion, even in the last several years, the comments section on his news reports and whatnot are very Jew-wise, a lot of Jew-wise comments there.
Well, which is good to hear. And we're seeing that everywhere now. It's not like before.
So anyway, I wanted to ask you real quick, had you heard about this article by Ann Coulter? It's about Jared Kushner and Trump. But basically, it sounds like Jared Kushner had appeared before some Jewish group in 2016, and they were real concerned about Donald Trump basically deterring illegal immigration. And he said, don't worry about it. That's already covered. He's not going to do anything about it. He's just going to give lip service. Did you hear about that?
I have not. That would be pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Because he's not doing anything. Let's be honest. He's not doing much. I mean, he can say he is, but it seems like, I mean, we had, two cases, one in Texas, one in New Mexico. I think in New Mexico, they were 200 illegals were apprehended by militia forces. And then I think another 40, 50 down in El Paso. And the New Mexico governor was saying this is not acceptable. It's like, well, what do you mean it's not acceptable? It's our country. I don't
think. Well, you know, one possibility that I thought of is, what would be the more perfect cover than to have a quote unquote Republican, conservative, patriot president, right? With all the backing that he's got. What would be a more perfect cover to say, look, he's under attack. His hands are tied right now. He doesn't have the political capital to really do anything. He wants to, right? He goes to all these rallies and tells his supporters, adoring supporters, that he's going to, you know, that's like number one on his list is to stop illegal immigration even now. But I mean, isn't that a perfect cover story to I mean, you know how fast the weeks and months go by. Next thing you know, another year's gone by and we've got a ton more illegal aliens coming in, and he's saying, oh, you just wait, once I get into a better position politically here and I can get some help from the other Republicans, oh, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to do something. And then all of a sudden, 4 years have gone by, and you got more illegal immigrants than you might have had otherwise.
I've heard this. Yeah,
I'll be honest with you, Fetch. I think these people are that, and I think they're that diabolical. I think Trump has been put in there to actually bring in more illegal immigrants with fewer resistance from the people like us and Donald Trump type people, supporters that would do something about it or stand up and be raising hell, because they're not saying anything. because they know once they're just waiting for that magic moment, right, where he's going to really take charge and do something about it. I'm going to tell you right now, I'm on the record now many times saying Trump is not going to do anything.
Yeah, other people are saying the same thing, that basically we have on the left side, we have this real war going along within the Jewish power centers. But we're not privy to that part of the table. It's just we vote. You either vote for Hillary or vote for Trump type of thing, but we're not welcome at the table. So basically these two South power centers, they are fighting. Had Hillary come in, it just would have been mass flooding. And maybe the Americans mass protest. Maybe. I doubt it. And Trump, again, is just basically the slow burn death. Trump is just bringing us a
slow. Well, this is the cleaner way to do it. This is the cleaner way to do it with Trump.
Yes, because it's slow burn and he's the nationalist and he's saying all the right things. So people are like holding out for hope.
The nationalist, the populist nationalist leading the whole freaking thing. He's the cover for it.
Yeah, and I think right now Trump has already betrayed that side of the nationalist element. I know he's lost a lot of my support. It's like, dude, you know what are you doing now? Again, we just right now I'm like you, Frank. I'm agnostic. Show me. You just finished your Mueller report. Okay, show me. If you don't scorch earth this thing, it's over. Because, dude, they're not just going after Trump. They're going after the American system of government. They are trying to destroy what's left of the American system of government and then leave us with basically a rogue government that can do whatever they want.
I tell you, I don't know. I just don't know. All right, I'll get out of your way.
All right, Frank. Thank you. Thanks, Frank. That's a good call. Thanks, Frank.
Oy vey. Oy gewalt. It's like another shower.
Oy vey.
Oy vey.
Oy vey, everybody.
How does it run by you? It's owned by you.
Very goddamn angry at tons of you.
I thrive on boy and tears.
Oy vey!
Oy vey,
everybody!
The Oy vey moment is proudly sponsored by Andrew Carrington Hitchcock, author of The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored. The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored features a rapturous 144,000 words that is replete with additional articles never before seen in print, and after having its distribution banned by Amazon and Lulu, The Synagogue of Satan, updated, expanded, and uncensored, is now available from Andy himself at andrewcarringtonhitchcock.com. Get your copy today, won't you? Of course, don't forget to listen to Andy's The Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show, which streams Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock a.m. to 11 o'clock a.m. Eastern on Eurofolk Radio at eurofolkradio.com. To listen, simply visit EuroFolkRadio.com during showtime and click on the Listen Live link or visit AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com for Andy's free show archive, which comprises one of the most extensive guest lists in the alternative media.
And this week's Oy Vey moment is going to come to us first from Romania. But before we get to that, we're going to go ahead and take a call from the 213 area code. Hi, welcome to Inside the Ally.
Hi, is this the Dr. Phil show?
No, sorry about that. You know what? Call back after the OIV moment. Not a good time to call. Thanks so much, Rick. No comment. I'm in a good mood today, so I'm not going to comment. The OIV moment, we're going to start over in Romania. Again, actually, we got two of them set up. One is in the UC Berkeley, California, and the other is in Romania. And we are talking here about, of course, Pesach, which is basically Jewish celebration of mass murder. I think Jews should be called to task about the celebration of mass murder. Again, this idea that, oh, we were slaves. Give us a break, guys. Seriously, give us a break. Your mythologies are sick, whacked out, and twisted, quite frankly. But there's a guy in Romania. I'm not sure what he is. I guess he's the president. His name is Klaus Iohannis. I'm not sure I said that right. Klaus Iohannis, he said yesterday in a message in relation to Pesach or Passover, in which he is reaffirming, get this, everybody, He is I don't know what that is. Your breasts. I don't know. I don't know what that even means, dude. Let's see. I'm getting pinned and I don't even know what they're saying. Once more, he says, I condemn. Get this, guys. Once more, he says, I condemn the actions that damage the freedom of conscience and taint the memory of the Holocaust. Mr. Ioannis, you don't care one thing. Because if you cared about our conscience, you would care deeply that we do not want the lies of the Holocaust thrust in our face. You know, there was a gentleman recently, he died, and he had created some love story about how he met this woman in Auschwitz and they grew up happily ever after type of story. Later on, after he'd already indoctrinated who many tens of thousands and who knows how many, maybe hundreds of thousands of people through his book circuits and whatever, he admitted the whole story was a lie. Mr. Ioannis, if you are reaffirming once again the freedom of conscience, you would not be forcing the Holocaust down the non-Jewish world's throats. So you don't care for one second about this idea of a freedom of conscience, because we should have every single right to not bother with the Jewish idea of a Holocaust. And we should have every right to force Jews to open the debate so that we can effectively deal with this and get to the bottom of this story. That's freedom of conscience too, Mr. Ioannis. But you don't care for one second about Ioannis, about this Mr. Ioannis. I don't even know if I'm saying this right. Ioannis. He goes on to say, the memory of the in Romania, the anti-Semitic, xenophobic, and racist manifestations must be harshly sanctioned with celerity in accordance with the legislation in the area. Why is it that you want to create a world, Mr. Ioannis, where Jews can basically become a tyrannical, dictatorial force within our midst? And this idea that it must be harshly sanctioned. What are we, a bunch of kids? Are you trying to tell all of the adults of this world that a bunch of punk people from the Jewish community can treat everybody like kids? Because this type of language sounds like you're talking to a two-year-old. Like you're like just some parent that's lost control, and you're going to talk like a two-year-old. I'm going to punish you. You're going to if you don't behave. Give us a break. We're all adults here, and it's time for you to get out of our way. We need, seriously, guys, the litmus test of any politician is where do they stand on the Jewish question? Not the Jewish question, the Jewish problem. And understand the difference between a Jewish question as it's been traditionally discussed through history, including within the Jewish community, and the Jewish problem itself. The Jewish problem is everything that Jews bring to our societies to alter and destroy our cultures and way of life. Now, I've learned by watching this E. Michael Jones and others, which I didn't know, and some of you have sent me this via emails, that there was always almost like a truce, an actual documented truce between the Jewish community and the Western world, that said, we will not go and harm your Jewish community, but you and the Jewish community agree equally not to involve yourself and harm our community. In this way, we can grow naturally within our own distinct philosophical ways. Folks, we are being retarded by a retarded, I mean, I'm talking about literal, from a literal retardation sense, not mental, but something that slows down development. We are being retarded by a retarding force. Again, it's called the power of Sukkos, and they want to bring everybody down to a primitive, pre-medieval mentality, which is basically what lies at the very, very core of Jewish civilization. He goes on to say here, well, actually it says, according to the head of state, the Jewish community has definitely contributed. See what I mean? It says they definitely contributed to the modernity and prosperity of our country, to the independence and national unity, as well as to our integration in the European and North Atlantic structures. No, they haven't. That's the whole point. They keep having to say what they can't do. If you Romanians were left to your own devices and you did not have to be subjected to Jewish usury, which is theft of your national resources to serve a bunch of Jews who produce nothing for you, you would be far ahead of anything that you would be today with the retarding force that is Jewish power within your midst. Says they talk about this valuable contribution. What's the valuable contribution that we see, Mr. Yohannes? An out-of-control, militarized lesbian, gay, transgender community? Financial organizations like PayPal and banks that actually shut down our banking capability because we don't agree with Jews and their idiocy? How about Jewish organizations like Facebook shutting down people because Jews disagree with their message? How about people like Twitter shutting down entire groups of timeline because Jews don't agree with the message? How is this, quite frankly, a democratic value, Mr. Yohannes? How is this a valuable contribution to us, people of Western civilization? How is having a group of rabbis promoting unmitigated migration into our countries a valuable contribution to our nations, Mr. Yohannes? See, there is nothing they are bringing to us that is valuable. There's nothing in culture that is valuable within their Hollywood. There's nothing of culture within their political process. It's all about how can we funnel and sneak money away to Israel every day. How is that a contribution to us, Mr. Yohannes? And because we hear Jews globally, this is a global phrase, Mr. Yohannes. You're basically mouthing like a parrot, an idiotic, stupid parrot, what is basically said everywhere across the Western world where Jews want to feel how self-important they are to the rest of us. You said nothing original, Mr. Yohannes. You sounded like a complete buffoon and moron, quite frankly. Straight up, dude. Mono to mono. Dude, shut up, man. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. Seriously. And then you're going to do it on Pesach where Jews are sitting there giggling and eating their bitter root and cheering on the death of the firstborn of an entire culture and civilization. You're going to say, hey, we're wonderful people. They're not. You can't sit there and celebrate mass murder and tell yourself and us that you're normal. You just can't. You're whacked. Yeah, can you imagine? I can't go to the depths of Jewish evil. I can't do it. I just can't. I'm not evil. But can you imagine? You know, Jews, we create a holy book, you know. You know, Jews, they just didn't let us be free. They enslaved us, and the God came down and he said, if you do not let my people go free, I will smite every single Jewish male that's firstborn. And whoa, and yay, it happened, and my people were set free. Okay, let's create a Jewish book let's create a holy book like that where Jews are enslaving everybody, so therefore some sky god gets to come down and kill every first Jew that's living today, every firstborn Jew. Yeah, I know. I sound like I'm a psychopath, right? I sound stupid. But Jews are actually doing this as a religion every year. Oh, happy Pesach. Oh, yeah, Pesach. Well, yeah, let's go kill some more people. That's not a religion. That's not even a religious celebration, guys. He goes on, he said, and he's speaking, of course, to the leadership, and Jews always have some federation. It's called the Federation of Jewish Communities of Romania. It says a celebration of the liberation of the Jews from slavery and their rebirth as a free people. Pesach renews with each celebration the fidelity of the spiritual values of Judaism, such as dialogue, solidarity, and tolerance. Are you out of your mind, dude? You really think Jews are tolerant? Come on, man. They shut you down. If you say something wrong, it's anti-Semitic, and they shut your business down. Don't lecture us about Jewish tolerance, dude. You're an idiot. Seriously, as a president of a country, any president of a country that sits there and tells us that Jews are tolerant, when we in America are seeing people silenced and deplatformed due to quote-unquote anti-Semitism, don't give us this crap about how this is intolerance or they're tolerant. Give us a freaking break. Don't talk to us about how there's dialogue. They shut down dialogue at every pit. You know what, Mr. Yohannes? You just came across as one of the most bald-faced, shameless liars
in Romanian history and why the people of Romania don't rise up and throw you out for the traitor and evil individual that you are is beyond me, because you literally just lied to our faces and you did it shamelessly to pander to a group of basically what? People who like to murder people. It's called Pesach. Haven't you figured it out yet, dude? It's the fetch. I think we're in a break. Are we in a break? No, we're not in a break. I just was sounding just compass like feeding back to me. So, guys, these are just some of the idiocy, I should say, that we see coming out of political leaders nowadays. This, by the way, has a code for it within the religious cycles or circles. They're called rectified goys. They're shameless goy traitors who serve Jews and their interests. It's called a rectified goy. Look it up on Google. Look at, and especially go get it from the Chabad movement. These are people that basically have, quote unquote, bowed down to the seven Noahide laws and actually will now work against the national interests of the people in service of Jews. And Mr. Iohannis is a shameless, disgusting, seriously, a disgusting rectified goy. And this rectified goy mentality, quite frankly, it's everywhere in our leadership. They're everywhere in leadership because that's who Jews buy and put into power. Oh, that's an anti-Semitic canard. But it doesn't matter whether you think it's a canard or not. You can't prove it wrong because we see it in their actions and their deeds and their words and their policies every single day. That is the Oy Vey moment, again, proudly sponsored by the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show. I'm hoping to be back on the Andrew Carrington Hitchcock Show for our Fetch on Fridays, not this week, but the following week. So you have to wait for that. We're trying to put something together. I got to free up my schedule, everybody. It's the Fetch going into break inside the Eye Live, Intelligent Media for the politically aware. See ya after this break. And welcome back. It's the Fetch, hour number 3, inside the Eye Live, August the 20th. 2019. Happy Easter weekend, everybody. Again, hope you've taken some time to color some eggs and hid them around. If you got some grandkids running around the house, that's a great thing. If you got some kids running around the house, that's an even better thing, perhaps. Of course, that's actually those who have the grandkids just say, no, it ain't really a better thing, man. It's better just have the grandkids. I can get rid of them, give them back to their mom and dad, and it's a lot better this way. Something like that. I know it kind of goes like that. But anyways, telephone lines, if you'd like to call in now, 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. We have a taker on that already. Banjo, Picking Gal, how are you? And welcome to the new Inside the Eye Live.
Good morning, Fat Joe.
Well, good morning.
From frosty Canada.
Is it still cold up there?
Oh, yes. We pretty nippy these mornings.
Well, you know, you'll be pleased to know that I'm still in relative shape at my age, and I am completely shirtless because it's like burning up here, and I don't want to turn my air conditioner on and kind of like ruin my microphone. So I'm like boiling here.
Oh,
I'm like semi sweating, man. I'm starting to like, I'm not sweating, but you know, you like kind of feel sticky, you know, that happens. So yeah, I feel for you, you know, I feel for you.
Right. So I wanted to phone in on an action item.
Okay.
I think if we are going to bring down this egregious cabal, we have to start right where they're making their profit. And in Calgary, we sort of set a precedent in 2011, and we dumped the horrific fluoridation protocol. And, of course, the cabal has come at us, you know, almost every year in the fall. They approach City Hall and tell us how, you know, oh, the poor children, their teeth are falling out of their heads because we don't have fluoride in our water anymore. And this cabal, we have to call them by name, the Public Health Gang. These are the... what do we call them, the accredited experts at the universities, mm-hmm. who help set policies. In fact, they were the thugs who initially put fluoridation protocols into most municipalities way back in the 1950s, and often they would come in by stealth and using massive disinformation propaganda campaigns. They would insist that we hold plebiscites, and often with slim majority plebiscites, they would enable the the protocols to implement fluoridation into our cities. Now, Canada, we have managed, many cities did not buy into the ruse back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. So Canada is only 30% fluoridated. European countries really had experiments, and in the 1970s, they dumped fluoride. Often, I think it was because of Dr. Carlson, Arvid Carlson led the campaign to stop fluoridating in Sweden, and he was a brain specialist, a Nobel Prize winner. So most European countries dumped doing this egregious. You know, water is the basis of all health, right?
Water and salt.
We need beautiful, clean water for health, and so if they can impact the quality of water. You know, in Calgary, we have a brand new cancer clinic. So, of course, they have to make sure that this new cancer clinic is going to be full of sick people. So that's why we have to fluoridate, right?
Well, it's not just that, by the way, Banjo. Is we've got a lot of situations now where the water in America, so much of it is absolutely polluted with all the chemicals from the pharmaceutical industry, from the barbiturates to the... I don't know, the Prozacs and things like that, all of this stuff that doesn't fully get broken down. So essentially the water supply in America is poisoned by the pharmaceutical industry. They have been a disaster to the people and the environment.
So what we did in 2011 is we had a number of people, and we had a few medics and some dentists working kind of behind the scenes. And they approached City Hall, and we used the language that, you know, this is a criminal act to be dumping caustic, corrosive, hydrofluosilicic acid, which is toxic waste from the fertilizer industry. It's a criminal act to be dumping that into tap water. If you or I did it, we would be in jail. Right? Mm-hmm. So we did get them to remove fluoride in Calgary, and they did it.
And that's a major city, too. That's a major city.
Yes. We did it by a vote in council, and, you know, the councillors showed themselves proud by doing the right thing. But, of course, now the bribery and the ones who are promoting this, one councillor in particular, Diane Colley Urquhart, is a tribe member, and she, you know, glowingly with her face smiling, pushing for, we must have fluoride for our poor little children.
And how do the people get rid of these people? I mean, obviously there has to be, like, the people have to become engaged locally. Have to.
That's right. But what they're doing is they have garnered a protocol that the university, I believe his name is Dr. Galley at the University of Calgary, and they have put together a massive report. It's called the CADTH report, CADTH. And this is an NGO, of course. When you look at the suspects that participate, they're all, you know, mainstream medics who, you know, all of these people are profiting from creating and studying and supposedly managing disease. Now, this CADTH report is going to come to council in June, and they will undoubtedly use massive mainstream campaigns in our newspaper to, you know, try and promote again another plebiscite in Calgary. So alert, alert, we do not vote on medical issues, right? Should my neighbor vote for the cures for my health problems? This is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So we have to rise up, and I think we can do this in every city. We need to, what do you do? You call for a notice of motion and you put it before the council and you just remove it. We hereby declare that our city is fluoride free and stop dumping toxic waste into our tap water.
You know, you almost need a website to teach people how to do that, Banjo, you know, put something together, you know.
Well, there actually are several good websites, okay. I think, right now. Fluoridealert.org, and there's another one, cof-cof.ca. That's the website of a dental officer from Toronto who's actually been doing ethical work. So the bottom line is, ethical medics and ethical dentists no longer promote fluoride. The only people promoting fluoride and fluoridation are either people profiting from it or people who are willfully and totally ignorant.
Yes, agreed. Okay, anything else?
So I'm off my soapbox, but I'm hoping that people, this is something that you can win in your city council. You just go, you stare them down, and you say, you know, we're not leaving until this matter is cleaned up.
Yeah, I think when they dump it, don't they have to be in toxic waste suits?
Oh, it's horrific substance, right? Yeah. Hazmat suits.
Yeah, hazmat, yeah.
Okay.
Well, hey, thanks so much, Banjo, calling in.
Defluoridate, fluorodeletion. We all need a fluoridectomy. By the way, the USA is 75% fluoridated, and they've been hyping it up and up and up with their promotions and propaganda.
Yeah. I'm not sure we can make
it. This is an area where we can have hands-on results.
Yes, and I think everybody should involve themselves in something locally they can do. Just leave a little bit of that television behind and get something involved, something locally, because that's what Jews are doing. While you're sitting watching TV, they're basically organized, getting paid to go out there and make problems for the rest of us. So you got to make problems for them.
Right.
All right.
Cool.
Thanks.
Clear.
Thanks so much.
Water.
All right. Thanks, Banjo. Thanks for the call. That's Banjo Pickingall, everybody, out in Calgary, talking about the defluoridization of the water supply, which is probably a very good idea. Again, people, you really should think about it anyways. Get some type of local thing you can sink your teeth into and make a difference on. It would, every little bit helps. We have more numbers than they have. They have more money than we have. But as you can see, the money does not buy the truth. And of course, if you get the word out and just keep hammering, hammering, and hammering, it just costs them more and more and more to maintain the status quo. So just want to fill you up real quick. There's been warnings coming out from Baghdad among basically going out to what's called the Popular Mobilization Units. These are known as Hashad al-Sha'abi. And they are warning today about U.S. troop movements. They are considering these U.S. troop movements exceedingly dangerous. They are approaching now the Iraqi positions from Syria. And the Hashad al-Sha'abi commander, Mr. Hashim al-Masui, described these operations, which he said could lead now to direct confrontation with the United States. He's also charged that the United States is spying on the border passing. Basically, as you know, the Americans, Trump was supposed to get his troops out, as he always does. He backtracked and he kept people at the Abu Kamal border crossing. And currently, the Iraqis are saying that they have evidence now that the United States is helping to infiltrate extremist elements back into Iraq via areas around the Abu Kamal crossing that the Americans control, and that they do not want to have any confrontation with the United States, But nonetheless, they stand ready to challenge the United States if the United States continues in its assault on the Iraqi people. So there you have some little updates coming to you from here in the Middle East. You know, over in France, they've had a lot of, you know, anger after this burning of the Cathedral of Notre Dame. And it doesn't have to do with the fact. Oh, I should turn those things down. But let's see. From the 949 area code, hi, welcome to Inside the Eye Live.
Mr. Petros, sir, how are you?
You know, I'm hanging in there, man. It's a nice day, hot, getting through everything. You might want to turn. Are you listening on the internet?
Well, I was. Now I was listening off an app that I downloaded.
You got to dump that, otherwise you'll be echoing.
Oh, okay, I'll do so right now.
Yeah, because your echo comes through.
How's that?
I stopped echoing, so yeah, it's good. Okay, how are you? Is this Jack?
Yes, sir. Jack from South Orange County, California.
Well, how's L.A.?
Well, it's warming up. We got cloud cover here today in South O.C. You know, fair 70s, maybe hitting the 80s now, but summer is here. Even though it's spring, it's the endless summer in SoCal, and it's heating up.
Well, you're by the beach, dude. It's no big deal.
I'm actually looking at the ocean right now as we speak.
Yeah, come on. So, right along the beach, it doesn't matter. Come on.
Hey, I was just in the chat room, and I posed a question to Mr. Paul English. I had asked him, are you familiar with the Cockney term front wheel? And I knew that you were thinking about bringing up some sort of esoteric moment in your talks.
Yes.
And I was curious if you're familiar with that term, front wheel.
No, I thought maybe it was just a bicycle wheel on a tricycle, but no.
So I met a Welshman here in Southern California that was raised in Oxford, and he taught me the Cockney rhyme. Front wheel skid rhymes with yid. Hence, that bloke is a front wheel. A Jew.
Really?
Yeah, so if you ever see a Jew around and you don't want to say Jew, you just say, that mate's a front wheel.
Wow. That front wheel's a little bit too inflated.
It's a bit vague, but nevertheless, I was trying to pose that question to him last week when Paul had took your place.
You know, and I saw your calls coming in, but actually I was like working and they were coming to this line on my cell phone. So
I figured that. I heard you picked up and then hung up. I was like, I figured it out after I realized Paul had a different call.
That's correct. Yeah, he has a 512, I think, Texas number. We might go to that system.
Sorry for interrupting you.
No, we're looking. No big deal. I just had to like keep clicking the red button there. Not clicking, but tapping. But nonetheless, what's up? Got the front wheel in. What else you got?
Oh, well, I listened to the April 11th show, and it was very powerful. A lot of great information. Once again, more arrows to put in my quiver and sling at those who don't know what's happening. But I just wanted to, give you a couple of ideas. You know, and you said you were thinking about introducing, since the Illuminous Observer was how you got your fame and obviously earned it through all your hard work, we're thinking about introducing some esoterica in your Inside the Eye talks.
Well, I think we do that, though. You know, like we blend it in, but we do it so subtly, like today, people don't really notice.
Yeah, of course. I was also chatting with Blackbird in the chat room, and he obviously has a tremendous amount of wisdom in the esoteric world as well. So it's always a learning opportunity when you listen to the Fetch and his cohorts, which I appreciate very much.
Yeah, we got a great extended network, man.
Yeah, I wanted to chime in on Donald Trump.
Okay, go ahead.
you know, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. And watching what's happened in the last couple of years now, the developments that have been taking place, I believe that I think Donald Trump is part of the tribe. He's part of that dialectic. They're controlling the argument of the process, right? Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And Trump has said a lot of great things. And when I initially was calling into the Stormfront show that preceded David Duke, you know, that's one of the things I didn't like about Duke, is Duke was always sort of supporting Donald Trump and justifying his actions. I mean, come on, let's really read into it. His son-in-law is Kushner, right? This ultra-Orthodox Jewish family. All his kids are married to Jews. I mean, what do you infer from such a fact? That this guy is going to support the white nationalist, yet he's so close to the vest of organized Jewry? What are people thinking? Are they really actually falling for this, I guess you would call it a trap? Because, you know, you have provocateurs out there that are justifying Trump's actions. And yeah, he might say great things like, we need to bring Detroit automotive industry back, you know. And I liked when I heard that tweet because I'm from Detroit and I understand what's happened to the automotive industry and how they're moving manufacturing outside the United States and taking jobs away. But let's face it, his actions certainly do not add up to any of his platform pledges that he's made before he was elected. And that's often the case with most politicians. But, you know, I contacted my friend that I grew up with in Detroit, who is a Department of Homeland Security Border Patrol agent. He's located out of Laredo, Texas. And I texted him this past Tuesday and inquired, what's taking place down on the border in Laredo? And this is what he said. We're getting hammered with Central American family units, mostly and unaccompanied minors, plus people from all over the world. Unprecedented invasion. So there you have it from someone who's got feet on the ground there at the border. And, you know, it's contrary to what we're hearing in the media and to some respect with what is taking place at the border. I'll yield to you, Mr. Fetcher.
Yeah, I've heard this report, actually, how they're getting hammered down this way and that we have a lot of these family units, just people with kids coming in. I've heard this report. And again, the issue of protecting the border at the end of the day initially falls on Congress because they since 2006, they've had the Secure Fence Act, but basically it's mandated that we secure our southern border. And that law has been passed by both houses and signed in 2006. So the Congress is responsible to fund all of this. Now, obviously, they have done nothing. Okay, it's 2019. The law was passed in 2006, long before you had a Trump. You know, long before. So now the only options that seem to be there is obviously that emergency declaration, just to go start building it. But again, I'm with you, man. I've heard too much talk and not enough action from this guy. Quite frankly, I still don't think, you know, a lot of us feel he was there to buy us time. And he was never the grand.
Let's be frank. Let's really evaluate what the current status is in America since Donald Trump has taken office. Yeah, he said fake news, and now we have more people that are scrutinizing the media, which is a great thing, right? Mm-hmm. However, we have a polarized culture. Never ever before in America have you seen Americans in conflict with one another. This didn't take place before the Donald Trump
administration. No, you know what? I'll comment on that one, though. The reason why you never had the polarized culture was because the right was sleeping. The left has always been there. And the left has been just moving for 40 years. The right has just begun to wake up, and that is what's polarizing this, because the left, they're doing everything they can to shut it down. We didn't have what we have going on today, 5 years either, with just how we're treated. Hold on, everybody. We're going into a break. All right, everybody, welcome back. It's Fetch Inside the Eye Live, intelligent media for the politically aware. Back. 949 area code. Jack, talking about Trump. So we want to just raise a few issues real quickly there, Jack. One thing is someone saying in the chat room, look, the whole Mueller affair took all the momentum out of the Trump presidency. What's your opinion?
Oh, I really don't know much about the Mueller situation. Getting echo here, but nevertheless, yeah, you know, my thoughts were this guy was a television personality. You know, you're fired. And now they made him president. Well, let's move back. Ronald Reagan was an actor, and they made him president. And Arnold Schwarzenegger was an actor, and they made him governor. And they're erasing the lines between reality and fiction. And this is all think tank driven, right? Such as the Frankfurt School in Germany. They've got these think tanks like the Rand Corporation and the Tavistock Institute in England and the Council of Foreign Relations and all these Jews that belong to these organizations that are social engineering, right, in the media. They have duped the American people with the dialectic. Yeah, they unveil Trump and roll out the red carpet and make him president. And he says all these great things about how he's going to make America great again. And who turned Make America Great Again? Charles Lindbergh, right? You know, that it wasn't Trump's, tagline. That was Charles Lindbergh's tagline. You know, he didn't want to get America into World War II. Trump said a lot of great things. I don't want to see soldiers go to war. I want to make America an economic powerhouse. But the fact is I don't see the economy getting any better. Right. He can make all the claims that he wants. All I see is that he's doing a hell of a lot bending over backwards for Israel. And actions speak louder than words.
I think you got a great point there when it comes to the Israeli side. I have never seen a guy just basically give Israel for nothing, getting nothing in return for the American people. Literally nothing. I mean, just giving things away for free. It's like, here, Bibi, take this. It's a gift. Bibi, take this. This is for you. And of course, Bibi's still there, and we still have more problems. I heard something they want to move 1 million people into Jordan as part of their quote unquote peace plan. That'll never fly. The Jordanians can't absorb 1 million people. They're only a country of about 5 million people. What, you're going to raise it by another million? Yeah, that would be like bringing 40 million people into America. 50 million in one.
Yeah, you know
what? It's no sense.
Trump's a great salesman. You know what he did? He sold the American people. He did a bait and a switch. And that's simply what it was. The bill of goods is garbage. He's produced nothing for his voters. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think that may be a voice that has to be probably raised more, because I can't disagree with it. Jack, let me move on. We got somebody else on the line. We want to get other people in. But a good point. Thanks for the call.
Take care of yourself.
Okay, thanks so much. And 604 area code, hi.
You've got a good point. It's Vera.
Hi, Vera.
I tried calling you on Thursday about 40 times, so the Skype was just being really ignorant.
You know, yeah.
And I tried and tried and tried and tried and tried.
Yeah, what I have to do, Vera.
Anyways, the reason I called, you know, I went to see my friend, the one that was living in Canada, then they moved to Russia. Okay, and Russia was still communist, but USSR was, you know, so the Ukraine was still Russia. So she was living in the Ukraine. She went to university. And now this is the first time I heard it. She said they were having sex on the streets, like the place that they went, she had to go through to get to the home they were staying at. They were literally having sex in the park. Literally, and guys were trying to pick her up, and sex was very open. And of course, nobody had any religion. And what else did she say? The only way that she got in good was to be in with the Jews, which she was friends with. She didn't know, but she had told me years ago that that was a trial run. What they did there in Russia, she says, do you think they relinquished their power when they said, I don't know who was in then, Yeltsin or whatever, and they took down the wall, you know, mm-hmm. and made it non-communist. There's no way. She says they didn't relinquish their power. So pretty much she's as much as saying that there's still, it's ongoing out there in Russia too. And now we know in China, and I know the man I lived with that was Chinese, his opinion of communism in China, he said, I'd rather trust the monkey than trust the rat, meaning they're very distrusting. Like he was forced to confess that he killed somebody in order that they didn't lose face, because he was really a good guy. But he said, in actual fact, if he had murdered that person, they would have put him to death. But they didn't want to lose face, and they threw him in prison for 35 years. Now, that was in China, because the Red took over China, meaning the Jews, basically. I mean, they started it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, and I want to say, banjo-picking girl, that's a pretty good deal if they could maintain that they didn't put that stuff in the water, because Creston, about 7 years ago, they were asked if they wanted that in the water. Like that was being brought up with council, and everybody said no, they didn't, and they put it in.
See, and this is, I don't see, this type of stuff, I don't see how you could even get away with it, quite frankly. If that's exactly the case, we don't need representatives. In today's world, we know where a lottery ticket was purchased, the time it was purchased, the store it was purchased at. We know that within 30 seconds of the lottery ticket being announced. You know what I mean? It's instantaneous. We know. So there's absolutely no reason with today's technology that we need representatives to vote for us on issues of this matter. We don't need them. They're redundant. We're paying. It's no,
they're redundant, but they're still in there.
Well, the point is that another solution here is to just get rid of these types of representation systems, because we don't need them. The reason you needed them in the past was because of the time and distance to get to somewhere to go and solve problems on your behalf. We don't need them anymore. Nowadays, if you've got an energized public and 40, 50, 70% are saying, no, we don't want it. We don't need politicians to even be involved. The city should say, nope, we're going to hold some type of secure transaction, and certainly it can be done. Trust me, you got banks doing it all the time. And we're going to hold
But the city workers must, like the mayors or whatever, they must be getting a kickback too. So that's why they're allowing it in. So then you got to get rid of it.
Yeah, and if there are kickbacks going on, again, see, there at this stage, there has to be some recognition that the politicians are at war with the people. You can't tell me that dumping caustic substances into the water supply is not an act of war and an act of violence.
Yeah.
And people need to start literally taking that representative aside and say, what did you just do? What did you just do to us?
I told you, though, remember a couple years ago, my brother had said that someone was running in Alberta, not Calgary, but in Alberta, and they promised the people to do something. They were going to do something for these people. So he got elected. Once he got in, he didn't do anything of what he said he was going to do. He was taken to court, and the judge said he can lie. That's what the judge said. So,
again,
well, what do you do with that then, Fetch?
Again, the same thing. The judges are at war with the people. So we have a political class at war with the people. This is, it's a form of warfare.
It is.
It's called lawfare, but it's warfare. Yeah. And at some point,
look at this vaccine. Go ahead.
The vaccines don't even, let's not even go there. I mean, vaccine manufacturers are some of the biggest corporate welfare whores in the world. I mean, they basically get laws forcing you to take their garbage, and then they got laws to protect them from the damage they cause. I mean, what a bunch of evil, disgusting losers make up this thing. And of course,
but if anybody listens to the box, and I'm telling you that people that are, because I went door to door for another issue, and I said something. She had a little kid, and I says, "Well, don't get your kid vaccinated." She says, "You know, I was thinking of getting him because he's got a bit of a cold." I said, "Don't get him vaccinated." Well, because they listen to the news, they hear on there. Now they like every other day. Oh, now they're saying there's even been deaths from the measles vaccine. Not the vaccine. They're saying from the measles.
No, measles is not a.
It's because they got the vaccine, right?
But yeah. Come on. When we were growing up, measles, mumps, and chicken pox were just things you checked off. You know what I mean?
I know.
We just had a little board. Yeah. Which kids got chicken pox this week? And you put a check mark on it. Little Janie got it. Tommy got it. Billy got it. And did you get it? Nope, I ain't got it yet. I never had it. I never had this. But, you know, we would always have this. Mumps, I never got any of them. But we had a lot of people that had chicken pox, mumps, and this stuff. Oh, Bobby couldn't go to school today. Why? Well, he had the chicken pox. Big deal. I mean, today's welfare losers, the people themselves are losers equally. Grow the heck frick up, guys. I mean, the population is like so childish and timid. It's almost a pathetic.
I know. Because they use the fear factor.
I don't care. They're still pathetic.
After 9/11, they went on and on and on. And I thought, we should sue these a-holes because they're just instilling fear to the zenth degree. Anybody that's believing, and then, you know, they have to get, Bush was in back then. Go shopping. You know, like he just came out with retarded stuff. Or if it feels good, do it. And I just thought, oh my God, this is the president.
You know, if it feels good, do it. That's a homo global thing.
That's right.
Seriously, I knew a lot of gay people. I knew a lot of gay and they were Catholics, by the way.
Go ahead.
I knew a lot of Catholic gay guys, bisexual guys, and they would use that phrase a lot. Well, what does it matter if it feels good? You know, if it feels good, do it. I'm like, dude, you're bizarre.
Okay.
You're bizarre, dude.
See, I never heard that.
Yeah.
I never heard that before I heard that from Bush saying it. And I just thought, well, that's a satanic thing. But maybe, perhaps it's a gay thing, you know?
Yep.
I didn't pick up from the son like I did from the father, like Bush, the pedophilia and all of that. But possibly he was as well, or is. Anyways, I want to say, you know, it was a great show last week, too. When you were gone, they really did a good job. You know, did you listen to any of it?
No.
You didn't?
No.
Well, you should listen to it because it was actually decent.
Well, you know, busy, man. What you want?
I know. Okay, anyways, I'll let you go if anybody else wants to call in.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Vera.
Skype was working, eh?
Yeah, everything's. Yeah, okay, we tested it before the show today. Thanks so much, Vera. All right, everybody, 1-323-275-1314. That's 1-323-275-1314. I just want to talk a little bit about the Mueller report, you know. Trump, you know, again, I can't argue with these people at this stage about Trump, because when it comes to foreign policy, he's basically, we're back to ground zero with this guy. He is just surrounded by a bunch of these Likudnik idiots who have not seen a successful thing unless sowing chaos and blowing money is successful. We've never seen them successful from the Iraq war to Afghanistan to effects of inside the Middle East. These guys are complete failures. So basically Trump is surrounded by Likudnik failures. Literally the guy is surrounded by idiots when it comes to foreign policy. everybody out there, especially those that really aren't quote unquote allies of the United States, they're just mocking this now. They call Pompeo a little kid. They call Bolton like this dolt, basically a dolt. We don't have smart people in our foreign policy. We don't have pragmatic people negotiating foreign policy because we don't have American nationalists in our foreign policy. We have Israeli nationalists in our foreign policy. Our foreign policy institutions are literally taken over and occupied by this Zionist occupational government force. That's number one. Number two, now let's move over to the Mueller report real quick. I read so far, guys, I've actually honestly read one quarter of the report. What I saw in this report after reading about, and not reading it fully because it's not all that important, but reading through, let's say skimming through and getting some details that sounded like it might be interesting, about 140 pages of the 440 some odd page report, I just saw a lot of disjointed things. Like, not Paul Manafort. Who's the other guy? Papadopoulos. Okay, Papadopoulos. There's a whole section about Papadopoulos. When I read that section, guys, basically, I know this type of person. I've been around these type of people. I've been involved with these type of people. They're nobodies. They are just people who have a little dream to steal some money, 30,000 here, 40,000 there, 50,000 there, pick up some cheap, easy money and try to broker a relation here or there. Myself, personally, guys, personally, I've been with presidents of countries. I've been with ambassadors of countries. I have personally written to the president of the Ukrainian government before, when Yanukovych was there. Personally, I've talked to Yanukovych's advisors. Guys, I've done all of this stuff. It doesn't mean anything. It's nothing. And people like Mueller and whoever wrote that report, if they don't know this, they're either crackhead stupid, or they're just being dishonest and filling a lot of paper. For you out there that perhaps don't know and think it might be, whoa, but it's like no big deal. All of this stuff is no big deal that I read. It was like, and then they're talking about Russian collusion, not even collusion, but all this Russian theft of the DNC stuff. I don't buy that for a second. That was probably just one big concocted, crafted lie. It probably mostly came from Seth Rich. That seems to be the prevailing belief. So basically, we could look at that whole beginning of that Mueller report. It's nothing but a lie and a cover-up. Basically, it was a Holocaust story, everybody. It's like Jews talking about how they were magical, mythical, pedal brain-smashing machines. There were 14 Jews put on a 14-pedal bicycle, and they powered this giant hammer, and it smashed the skulls of a Jew who was put inside. Yes, that's really happened. And if you don't believe me, you're an anti-Semite. I'm going to go tell the local government on you, and I'm going to get you put in jail for not believing me. No, really, it was stupid. Guys, it was just dumb. Now, what somebody had told me today said, look, read the whole thing and maybe try to pick it apart a bit better. But what we think is going on, and this was put out there actually at the Conservative Treehouse, I believe, equally. They said, look, this looks by, it was written by a Jewish guy, and we know the Jewish guy. That's what I was told. It was written by a Jewish guy. We know who the Jewish guy is. And he has crafted this thing in such a way that there are stepping points for the Democrats to now try to launch some type of impeachment proceeding against President Trump. Now, my thing with Trump is this. Dude, you won an historic election. You went into this election with massive amounts of velocity that put you there. You did overcome a huge amount of fraud and corruption to become the president of the United States. When you went in, it is absolutely true that you have been stopped nearly every step of the way. The problem with Mr. Trump is that where he has power, which is in foreign policy, he is a complete buffoon. He basically is an Israeli firster. He has no idea about American nationalism. He's very good for the state of Israel, and the state of Israel knows it. He is terrible for the American people. Terrible. On April 15th, 2 years ago, I believe, April 15th is the birth date of the Likud's great guru spiritual leader, Schneerson. On this date, Trump decided to launch 125, 35, whatever missiles into Syria based on lies from the fake media that he wants to criticize all the time. But yet he's going to follow the lies of the fake media and go launch a bunch of missiles, create what is essentially an act of war against the nation for nothing, and is now a committed war criminal. He just hasn't been tried, but he's guilty. He launched this, and it's an act of war. Here on April 15th this year, the holiday of Mr. Schneerson, the birth date of Mr. Schneerson, we see the Church of, or the Cathedral of Notre Dame go up in smoke. Anyways, back to the, I got sidetracked there, but let me get back to the Mueller report. I have some of it open. They talk about all these contacts with Paul Manafort and all of this, but basically when I read this, guys, I saw a whole lot of nothing, a complete waste of time. They're talking about all of these Russian groups, basically a troll factory. But now you learn from different sources that the troll factory was really brought to us courtesy of a couple Russian Jews, or I'm not saying Jews, quote unquote Russians. But I would like to know, are they really just Likudnik Jews rather than Russians? That would sure change the whole narrative really quick, wouldn't it? Furthermore, the numbers that are attributed to this quote unquote troll factory is minuscule compared to the collusion of CNN, CNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, the New York Times, Facebook, Twitter, Google, Apple. This, whatever the Russians are accused of doing, is less than probably 1/120th of the power waged by these other media conglomerates against the American people. I saw figures, well, you know, it got 100 million looks or views. Something like that figure was brought up in there. I'm like, well, so what? Facebook alone deleted 2 billion pages from conservative Americans just in the midterms. Okay, so here you've got Mr. Mueller. You want to talk about collusion? You've got Facebook deleting 2 billion pages to benefit the left, to benefit the Jewish left. And yet the Americans have no recourse about that. Mueller never once talked about the crimes of Hillary Clinton. It was only a one-way ticket about collusion, collusion, collusion. And quite frankly, I didn't even believe that there ever would be any collusion because it just doesn't make sense. Quite frankly, it doesn't make sense. And we've had people come on the show like Christopher Bjerknes and a few others trying to sell this. Like, come on, guys, give us a break. You're just give us a break. You don't have an idea how actual global politics work. Seriously, just whatever, man. Nice try. You need a dumber audience. So basically, guys, when you look through the Mueller report, and I'm only about a quarter of the way through it, it's really just a bunch of disjointed stuff that is nothing. It really is nothing. And no matter how you try to spin this together, there's nothing there. It's and then you're redacting all this. So what are you? It's investigation technique. Oh, give us a break. Yeah, you guys are so special and it's an investigative technique. No, you just don't want to reveal the information. It should just be fully unredacted and leave it. Because quite frankly, nobody trusts Mueller. Nobody. And did you see Rosenstein? He's sitting back there with these big, stupid round glasses, and his eyes basically as round as his glasses. And he's just staring out into space like, oh, shoot, what did I get myself involved in now? Every time Mueller said something, he's gulping for fresh air. He can't get enough air down. You're thinking, man, this guy must be dead meat, because he's not thinking. He looks like he's dead. He's like in a fog saying, what the heck did I just happen? What just happened to me? Now for Trump, here's the thing that Trump doesn't get. And maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think so. This isn't about Trump. Trump's saying, I'm a target, I'm a target. No, Trump, you're not the target. The American people are the target. You're the, literally for worse or better or worse, you are the last element to be taken out. And they probably have you now under control. It's the fetch, everybody, inside the iLive. Intelligent media for the politically aware for April the 20th, Easter weekend. Thanks for listening, everybody. Good night from Riyadh. See you guys all Thursday inside the iLive prime time.